Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. My name is Ben Jackson, so welcome back to myself. I guess I can do that. long time, I've forgotten even how to speak and all that, so this could be a struggle. I apologise in advance. Scott and Joris are obviously back. They've been holding the fort while I've been away. Guys, it's a pleasure to be back with you. Hope you're doing well.
It's a pleasure to have our erstwhile host back as well. And may I say, everything has changed for you in the meantime, but one thing that hasn't changed is the entertainment and craziness in this league.
Are we sure it's been there and not, well, I'm not sure if we can disclose a name here, but the little man.
No, little Elijah decided he didn't want to be on this episode of the podcast, but don't worry, he's the newest member, I guess, of the Belgian Football Podcast. And he's been enjoying the matches. He's been watching away with me. He's got his own opinions about things. I won't bring them, I'll keep them to himself, but maybe at the end of the season, he can kind of give us a rundown of what he thinks has happened since April the 9th, because for some reason, he doesn't have much memory before then. But anyway, let's get on with the podcast and dive into another, as Scott said, round of excitement and craziness in the Belgian Pro League. On Friday night, Veselo drew 2-2 with St. Truiden. On Saturday, Gent beat Mechelen 4-2. Cercle Brugge beat Genk 4-1. And Charleroi beat Molenbeek 3-1. On Sunday, Club Brugge got a massive win. They beat Antwerp 2-1. Leuven beat Standard Liège 3-1, so Standard Liège lose again in the playoffs. Union and Anderlecht drew 0-0 in Brussels derby. And Kortrijk got a massive, massive 1-0 win over Erpen. That means, as many listeners probably know, Erpen are down. Kind of inevitable. We will get to that near the end of the episode. So if you want to hear more about that, you've got to stay listening until then. Before we started, I kind of said to the guys, I was like, I don't think we need to talk much about Veselo against St. Truiden. But then, Joris, you said you had a couple of points you wanted to make about that one. So I'll hand it straight over to you because I just kind of thought this is one of the more pointless games of the season. Even though Torsten Fink the other week was like, there's no such thing as a pointless game. It's a great chance to like try things out and blood the young players and stuff. And I was like, that's what preseason friendlies are for, aren't they? Not like actual league games. But
yeah.
Anyway, over to you, Joris.
I guess so, and I literally have two sentences about it, and I guess then we will be done. This was not one of them, mind you, but that's now 11 games without a win for Westerlo, 5 games without a win for Sint-Truiden. That's one sentence, and then two, well, you don't need to watch the whole game again. Well, that would be pointless, but there were a few great strikes in this one, though, so I just wanted to give a mention there that actually a start of a weekend of a lot of long-distance goals, actually.
Yep, Joris is right about that. Actually, the one note that's maybe worth adding to this, Ben touched on it, and, you know, the pre-season friendlies thing, we did see somebody who's been there for a little while now, not seen that much action, Adriano Bertaccini, second goal, I think, in 10, has actually done all right in the games he's featured in, but that's my one takeaway from this entire game. That and still no real news on who Westerlo are going to appoint yet as their permanent T1, but they've still got plenty of time to talk to people.
Yeah, I wonder if they're just waiting to see kind of how the dominoes will fall at the end of the season in other leagues and then kind of picking someone up from there. But yeah, big summer ahead for Veselo, that's for sure, kind of watching on. They've got exciting young players, but they need someone that can bring that all together. Bertaccini, yeah, it kind of was like him and Ito kind of combining both in this one, setting each other up and scoring at the same time. So we've obviously all been calling for him to be playing more, and Fink now obviously has no excuse not to play him with the game kind of being meaningless. So hopefully it will kind of benefit them in the long run going into next season with him being kind of that main striker for the Canaries. To a much more kind of crucial and important game in Brussels, Molenbeek against Charleroi. Molenbeek, for them, they just needed to win or even get a point to kind of keep kind of more pressure on Kortrijk and Erpen, just kind of deny those guys the chance to get back over them. But just a terrible, terrible start for them. That first half just completely, I think, Scott, you just like that, it's over after Grégion made it kind of 3-0. Do you guys think Huber could have saved the kind of first strike from Daly? It looked pretty kind of weak goalkeeping from him. And just kind of, I don't know, just looking at the numbers as well for Molenbeek, they finished with 14 shots, only one of them going in, and an XG of 0.83 just shows they're kind of, in my mind, just taking kind of quite inefficient shots and not really creating clear-cut chances that, on the other hand, Charleroi were able to kind of pick them apart quite easily.
Yeah, I think Molenbeek should have been doing better in a game like this, you know, especially, you know, when Charleroi are effectively safe. I think, you know, I think we know that Charleroi are probably the better side because they have obviously had the better season. But, you know, when they've got so much to play for Molenbeek, then, you know, it's kind of one step forward and two back. It's felt like that for them a lot of this season. This is kind of a nightmare result in a lot of ways because it threw everything up in the air again. And gave the initiative to Kortrijk, which we'll talk about shortly, because they managed to really seize that opportunity. Charleroi just are kind of cruising through these playoffs, actually, and it surprised me slightly. I mean, I felt a couple of wins would be enough to kind of see them secure, which has turned out to be the case in the end. But, you know, they're enjoying themselves now that the pressure's off. And the hard work can already start. Rick de Mille's already talking about staying around longer. Yannick Ferreira's talking about players getting a little bit too comfortable and maybe hinting that they thought they were already safe. They'd done the hard work. They've now got a situation where they have to go into next week and win against Eupen, which you would imagine they would because of circumstances and because they have to, and hope that Kortrijk don't. It's not entirely in their own hands. That one's going to go to the wire. So if you're going to watch any games this coming weekend, those playoff three games are going to be well worth a look.
Just a shame that it's twice a game with a team that needs to, well, that really needs the points, and one that already knows their fate, positive and negative in either game. Of course, but yeah, definitely squeaky bum time. We use the phrase again, but yeah, for Molenbeek there, because yeah, they just threw this one away too easily. There seemed to be some uptake in defensive form under Ferreira, but that seems to have faded away over the past few games as well, especially in this one. And yes, I do feel like Hubert should have done better on that first goal. I also felt he should have done better on another game. I think they won that one, probably the game in Kortrijk, where they did win eventually. But his mistake might have brought Kortrijk back into that game. And Charleroi fulfilling their duty and yeah, killing the game also in a few minutes after scoring the 2 and 3-0 inside a span of 5 minutes, of course, which the nil two there were to watch as well. Like a really good team goal and great finish as well from Ragnes. There was also a few changes already before the first quarter of the game was done. Actually, both sides had to change already, and RWDM, it even became another one before the break with Ren Adelaide. I don't know if there's an update on that, because people were still very worried after the game about his state as well. But no news is good news, I guess. But yeah.
I think I didn't read it, but there was an article which didn't make it sound like it was like horrendous. So I'm hoping that's what it was. I haven't actually read it, but I'm fingers crossed, because yeah, he did obviously collapse, and it's just always quite scary seeing that, especially when you see like a footballer do it, because they're like, you just see them as this kind of peak physical fitness, and while you're sat there like eating a tub of ice cream and like drinking a beer, you're like, how am I going to survive if these guys can't? But he looks like he's okay, and yeah, I don't know if you guys have touched it, but I still don't understand why De Forney's not playing over Hubert. I thought De Forney's actually had a pretty decent season. Like, yeah, he's not been perfect, but he's made some crucial saves in some games earlier this season that kind of, for me, has made him seem to be the better goalkeeper out of the two. And I know you don't kind of want to get carried away with it, because obviously Charleroi are playing like the three worst teams in the Pro League, and they should be better than those three teams. But I do kind of like it, what I'm seeing under Rick de Mille, and I think some players, maybe someone like a Dan Heymans or someone, is going to benefit a little bit more from his system, like kind of seeing what he did at Vestalo, where he started to get the best out of some of their kind of creative midfielderish types that can score goals. He still needs to stop hitting the post and doing all that sort of stuff, because he seems to always be doing that. But I felt like, yeah, someone like him could benefit, and I'm excited to kind of see what they look like next year if de Mille stays. It just really does depend on what they do to bring kind of a squad around what his kind of vision is for them. Whereas his old team, Vesely, look like, yeah, it looks like it could be one that kind of does come back to bite them, but it's kind of depends what you, how you see kind of the morals, I guess you could say, of that decision that they made. Another side that obviously going to be looking for a new head coach, Mechelen, with obviously Beşiktaş leaving. Again, obviously also looking for a new coach. This was kind of the battle of the teams to kind of prove to new coaches that they should get hired. If you're looking at taking over Gent, you'll probably just be looking to kind of bottle this Tarik Tisudali performance up and just bring it out whenever you need it, because, yeah, another fantastic performance from him, goals and assist as well. Mechelen obviously had more of the ball as well, Scott, so I guess they'll be a little bit frustrated that they didn't kind of maintain their lead and kind of keep it going. But it's kind of the way this playoffs have gone, isn't it? They just kind of petered out a little bit under Hasi, just kind of as the season's gone, I think they're just getting maybe a little bit tired and kind of not maintaining the level that they've been, they did kind of go for that run that they went on.
Yeah, I think Mechelen gave it a really decent go. They had to, obviously, just falling a bit short, really. It's interesting to me that Gent managed to really be very good this weekend. It's something that has eluded them to various state points during the course of the season, and that's their efficiency. They've dominated so many games this season and not taken advantage of that domination. And this weekend, although maybe they didn't dominate this game in the way that they have some others this season, they really did take their chances. And for Mechelen, I think it's a case of, you know, you just wonder what could have been after that awful kind of first 10, 12 games of the season. You know, they make the change, things start to get better, and, you know, they've really built kind of slowly and steadily since then, narrowly missed out on playoff one, as we know. And I don't think anybody really expected them to go and win playoff two. There was a feeling that they could maybe push Gent kind of quite hard, not as hard ultimately as I think a lot of us would have liked to have seen in the end. Gent have been very good. We know that when we get to this point of the season, often this is when they're at their strongest. And Big Hein this week saying that he's happy with the result, but not happy with the performance for the second week in a row. And he's in a slightly strange position because we know he's leaving, and he's got one task left, and that's to, you know, secure that European spot. They've won playoff two, and he's now looking ahead already to the jump-off match against a playoff one side. It will be an away fixture for the Buffaloes as well, because we know that game's going to be played at the home ground of the playoff one side. And a one-match shootout. So he's really kind of encouraging his players really strongly at the moment not to take their eye off things. He has admitted he's going to mix it up a bit as well over the next couple of weeks to try and give some other players some game time. But he still wants them to take it very seriously, even though the main job's been achieved. But yeah, Mechelen, big summer ahead, some big choices, which they've got to get right, because as me and Joris were talking about last week, they're in a slightly vulnerable position. So they need to, you know, make some smart choices to make sure that next season doesn't start the way that this one did for them. And for the Buffaloes, it's full steam ahead at the moment.
Is it a good thing or a bad thing that they're still that they're already there? That's also another question we will only know the answer for in a few weeks' time, of course. And, well, of course, we don't know if that would be the answer to that question, even if it's related, but... But yeah, like maybe it's good to stay in a competition as well. That's what we often see. But yeah, they did finish the job here, despite a good first half from Mechelen. But yeah, they were just not efficient enough because they managed to be behind after that first half. So yeah, definitely at the back, they gave away a few goals too easily. There, like I said before already, many great goals from distance also in this game. And in this match day as well. And Gent just scoring for fun in this playoffs. And just one shout out as well to Julseger, who also got back onto the pitch and also scored with a good strike from distance as well.
Yeah, nice to see him back. He's always been one of those players that I quite like. He's quite versatile, isn't he? You can tell Hein quite likes him because he can kind of move him around the pitch and stuff like that. And it is interesting to think that what is his motivation to get them into Europe, to get them that European spot? Like, what is the kind of the motivation there? I guess, I don't know. But I think you're right, Joris. I think it's interesting to think they've got to try and maintain a level in a kind of playoff where they've got nothing to play for, really, because they've already wrapped it up. So I think that's like psychologically going to be reasonably difficult to do. Like, how do you manage that? I think it's actually quite a big test. But I mean, we knew they were going to win playoff two because it's like they're kind of, they live for playoff two wins, don't they? Like, it's their thing. Sort of stay there forever. This one of the sides that obviously beat them into, two of the sides that obviously beat them into playoff one, Cercle de Bruges and Genk, they met at the Ambrydon. And yeah, just pretty abject defending from Genk in this one. Another fantastic performance from Felix Lamartial. Like, I think Miro Muzlic was kind of raving about how good this kid is. Just on the training ground, he says like he's the fastest in the on the kind of training pitch. He's always putting in lots of hard work and stuff like that. And yeah, you can see he's one of those kids that kind of like loves the game and loves to play the game and just enjoys kind of trying to boss that midfield and dominate the midfield. So I thought he was excellent in this one once again. Thibaut Sommers as well had a decent game for him. He's not one normally that, like, he's one of those kind of normal, kind of good at the press and working hard, but doesn't always come up with goals and assists. But he got a couple each in this one. They just signed Abby Francis to a longer term contract as well, which I think is a really good move when you consider that De Silva Lopes is probably going to go, and Abby Francis was brought in classic Cercle fashion, is it? Francis was kind of the next one behind Lopes if Lopes left, and they kind of set that up already. But yeah, Joris, I know you were just very unimpressed with Genk's defending in this one. And yeah, not the first time in this playoffs that the defending's been kind of wanting.
Yeah, well, specifically the last three games, because before that, it actually seemed that the defensive issues were something from the past. But yeah, that has been proven wrong in 10 days, unfortunately, by a certain sides based in Bruges. That, yeah, only 1 point from Genk in the four games against the Bruges-based teams as well in the playoffs now. The good thing is they already faced them all now, so there are no more Bruges teams to face anymore. That's something, because, well, they actually gotten all the points against the three other sides who they now face again. So that might be somehow a way of encouragement. But yeah, well, yeah, can't really take away much from Cercle, so I'll try not to do that as well. First goal for Malamé it felt this game in the end could have been 7-1 at some point. Like in the second half, yeah, that's yeah, not good. In the second half, the start, it was, you would expect a reaction from Genk, but the opposite was true, and yeah. They were overwhelmed by Cercle. It was just waiting for the fourth one to get in. Slightly understandable, because right before the 3-1, which was in the stoppage time of the first half, there was a really big chance for Eluwadi for the 2-2. And that then the game would have been a completely different story, of course. Or could have been, at least. But, yeah, just 11 goals against in these three games, and three losses with at least three goals difference in a row. And just also the way these 11 goals were conceded, that's just abysmal defending. McKenzie having a few really bad games in a row now. And not only him, it's gone pinning down to one player, but a few of those goals were down to him and a few others. Looks like there's not that... Like, I can only hope that the intensity comes back that they showed in these previous games that they won or drew against Cercle de Bruges, in that case, in these first four games of the playoffs, and that this was a temporarily going back to the shaky form that they're used to. But I hope it shakes up one more time and stays up in that case.
Well, I think that noise that everyone just heard a little bit of in the background is how Joris feels generally about this game. Yeah, I mean, I won't ask him about how poor Genk were defensively and how he feels about that, because he said quite a lot about that. It's interesting to me kind of how fragile Genk have seemed at times. Wouter Vranken was, you know, quite clear after this game. He was talking about players refusing to take, you know, basic responsibility and just not doing the work. You know what you're going to get when you're playing Cercle when you go to the Jan Breidel. And I think Genk really struggled with, you know, Cercle's game. To be fair to them, lots of sides have done this season, but Genk are, you know, a good footballing side. They play football the right way, I think, anyway, as do lots of others. They have good technical players who have the ability to play around that press. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why Vranken was really quite annoyed after this result as well, because he knows that they have the technical ability to match tactically the way that Cercle are going to play, and it just didn't happen at all. And Joris is right, it could have been a few more than four. Really, really strong performance, and Genk just didn't cope with Cercle's game. Big Kev is now on, I think, 26 and 35, I think, is it? Unbelievable. And Ben's already mentioned Felix Le Marchal, absolutely brilliant. He is gathering interest by the day. There's a lot of interest from other Pro League clubs, apparently, as well as clubs in other leagues in Europe. I'd be very surprised if he was still at Cercle in any contractual form next season. He's done his chances of a really interesting move, no harm at all. And he's always been very good. He's been good from the moment he came in, I think. He's just got better and better, I think. Lots of people watching him. And, yeah, I think, you know, Cercle and with a real shout of claiming that European playoff spot, and that would be, you know, if you thought qualifying for playoff one was a big achievement, then that would be really something, and that's something to watch out for. Equally, Genk failing to do it now would be, you know, a failure of opposite proportions and could result in potentially heads rolling there, because there's got to be a minimum requirement now to offset the general disappointment.
That has nothing to do with the results now, and I fear the decision there has been made, but it has nothing to do with whatever happens now still.
Yeah.
We're talking about the manager here, obviously.
Yeah. But, I think there's a feeling, isn't there, Joris, that there may be a change regardless. How do you feel about that? Would you like to see it? Is that more to do with how the season's gone or because of other things going on in the background, do you think?
Well, I think we talked about this. Nothing changed since two months ago. Like the manager feels like he's doing the best he can with the material he's got. Then the board feels the material they got is a bit better than I'm personally siding with Franke here than what it actually is. But just to mention that. But also I wanted to bring another Cercle point as well home here. Like that were Denki's two first assists of the season as well. And they both were actually shots, I guess, as well. So that's the irony of it all, of course. That's another thing, how everything seems to fall into place. And additionally, also to come back to Scott's point, going into the playoffs at, I guess Genk actually have more points in the playoffs still than Cercle now. So like that equation is like a bit strange. Like coming into the playoffs, it probably would not feel like it would be a good or a bad thing for either side. But it would sway to one side or the other. But now, yeah, Genk is in a downward trajectory, and then Cercle are a bit on the upwards trajectory. So I hope that turns around again. But yeah, it's more of a hope than it's a bit like my dreaming and I hoping for a title just 2 weeks ago. such madness thinking about it now. But yeah, that's how the playoffs works.
Yeah, especially these kind of like elongated, longer playoffs, isn't it? We've kind of had these waves, which you don't really get if you just got four teams. Like it can be quite, you can just kind of like teams can just hit that run of form and just kind of smash through it. Yeah, the assist thing's so funny because like last year, I think he almost got double digit. I think he got 9 assists in the league. Lots of those long balls from a throw in, he'd flick it around to Ada. Like he was kind of more primarily a kind of provider than he was a goal scorer. I think 11 goals, 9 assists. And then this year, he's just completely flipped this like, kind of switch to being the main goal scorer without Ueda there. So it's kind of, I hope whoever, because I don't think he's going to be there next season, wherever he goes, they find a way to kind of combine the two kind of elements of Kevin Denki, the two Denkis, and make this kind of one super striker. And Le Martial, like, I just feel like Monaco would be quite like, give him a chance in Ligue 1 next year. Do you know what I mean? I feel like he seems like he's ready to kind of be given that role there. Rather than kind of, I don't think, like, as much as I'd love to see him back in Belgium, I don't think he should be coming back to Belgium. I feel like he looks like he's ready to kind of step up and kind of play in. Some people may disagree with us, but I think everyone kind of understands that there are stronger leads than the Pro League and he probably deserves to be playing in one of those.
One point, with all the praise, but like, okay, in this game it was not the case, but sometimes he's on the ball, he's great, but he's off the ball, can be really, really off the ball. that's something that he needs to work on. I think he knows that as well. But yeah, that's definitely probably why he's at the stage in his career that he is now, which is not a bad thing, of course, but just coming from Monaco and then being loaned out instead of already having been given a chance in the fold there.
Yeah, and of course, he's only 20 as well, like you said. It's like, if anywhere to learn what to do off the ball, you'd think going to a team like Circle, where it's like they're very happy to not have the ball, like he needs, that's where this season he should be getting a lot of coaching in terms of that. And the last part, I'm also with you, Joris. I agree with Rankin on kind of the tools at his disposal and what he's had to do and is expected to do with them. I think there's a lot of players that have come in, and no disrespect to them, from kind of lower kind of tiers of the Pro League. A couple of them from Charleroi, who I think are good players, but I don't think they are able to replace what was gone. I don't think. Although, to be fair, I think Kiembe's been pretty decent when he's been playing in recent weeks. Like, I think he's fine, but he's kind of one of those, he's just a solid Pro League player, and it's at the level Genk want to be hitting. They're not, usually they're kind of hitting the players that are better than the Pro League and can kind of move on and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. Let's move to another club who they only have one real shot at European football now, it feels like, and that's to win the cup. That is Antwerp. They obviously lost to Club Brugge 2-1. Mark Van Bommel was leaving at the end of the season. Kind of, it's been said that he's leaving at the end of the season for months now, and it's finally been really kind of confirmed that this will be happening. Which is, I kind of understand. I think if he can win the cup, he's really reformed himself. So it's probably the wrong word, but kind of returned as like an actual kind of respected head coach now. Like, he was a bit of a kind of, oh yeah, Van Bommel, yeah, you'll be good for like 3 months and then you'll just completely crash. And they did kind of do that last year, but then he actually recovered. So it's like, oh, look, he can recover and they can win the league. So if he leaves with two domestic cups and a league title, you'd have to say that's a really, really good spell in charge, and he deserves a chance to kind of maybe find another role. I'm just really intrigued to see what Antwerp do next season. I think there's been money spent unwisely. There's some good players in that squad. There's so much kind of uncertainty on who's going to be in that squad. One of those players with lots of uncertainty did honestly the most bizarre thing I think I've ever seen to start a game, just absolutely whacking into, was it Onyedika, I think he takes that, wasn't it? Just flew into him, yep. Literally from kickoff, guys. Like, this isn't even like the game had been starting for a bit. He goes to close down. Onyedika does that. It's a classic move, isn't it? Where you just kind of block that initial run of the player. Like, this, it's just a football move, really. But Janssen seems to be very offended by it and just absolutely rattles him in the back, puts him to the floor. Instant yellow card. The quickest yellow card in Pro League history for Vincent Janssen. And it was just bizarre. It was honestly bizarre. It's like, where's this frustration like come from? Like, is there something else that happened like in previous matches that they've got a thing and they're like, we're going to target him? It was an entertaining game. I could quite enjoy the game as a whole. I felt the atmosphere at the Bosel Stadium was just fantastic. I thought it was a really, really hostile atmosphere between both fan bases, which can sometimes boil over, but I thought it was great. There was clearly passion on both sides. The players, I think, bought into that as well with some of the tackles and some of the moments. I thought club deserved to win. I thought Antwerp looked a little bit better in the second half when they brought on the likes of Balakwisha and Kirk. I think they were able to be a little bit more direct, but I just feel like they lack some sort of creativity in midfield that just can open things up. I didn't like how they were playing in the first half, trying to like go a little bit direct and stuff like that. So, yeah, club obviously will get to kind of what this result means for them in terms of kind of title chances and stuff like that. But I thought on the whole, they did deserve to win this game. But I really enjoyed it as kind of the atmosphere and stuff. And I felt, yeah, it was a good kind of nice lunchtime Sunday kickoff to watch.
Yeah, well, Vincent Janssen's yellow card was so shocking that even Mark Van Bommel was keen to distance himself from that and say, just for the record, I didn't put him on Udica and I didn't tell him to do anything. That was purely a personal choice, which amused me kind of quite a lot when I saw that, because he did get asked about it. Just bizarre, actually. Although a lot of people were saying, and I think it's worth asking, is there a discussion about a red card in there? I mean, I know it's early in a game, but...
To me? to me, it's a yellow for Onyedika for obstruction for the first foul, mm-hmm. because unlike Ben, I do feel like that's, well, should be punished. But yeah, then the reaction, well, it's a reaction, and the reactions are usually punished harder. So, and I feel like the reaction indeed definitely was more than that. So yeah, for me, yeah. It's a yellow and a red for Janssen as well.
Yeah, it's such an interesting conversation, this, because people have been talking about this particular moment a lot over the weekend. A lot of club fans obviously are saying it's a red, surely. When I saw it, I thought, what's going on there? And much like Ben, I thought something must have happened here. There must be some old needle between these two, especially, you know, for it to come within the first 10 seconds of a game. But for me, it's the way that he leads with his elbow on the second part of the challenge that I think is, you know, really, really, really dodgy. You know, so I'm kind of leaning towards Joris's thinking on this, that I think he's a very, very lucky boy indeed. But, I mean, looking at the game itself, Antwerp and the whole playing kind of quite well. Ben's right, much better in the second half than the first. They've had a really poor playoffs. We know that. I think they've been kind of just... you know, kind of living in borrowed time a little bit. I think you have that thing when everyone knows the coach is leaving, players have dialed out a little bit, they're waiting for this cup final, you know what I mean, the culmination of the season, the only game that really has any meaning for them. Interestingly, on the cup final, Antwerp haven't beat Union yet this season. Two wins for Union and two draws. So Antwerp have a point to prove, not just because the manager's leaving and that makes the season look more rosy if they win it. You know, they've got that point to prove as well, and that's an interesting one in itself, and should make that quite a feisty encounter, I would think. Mark Van Bommel wanting to highlight that he thinks they have to come into this cup final approaching it slightly differently. I wonder, is that mind games with Alexander Blessing? Is he trying to get him to double guess, second guess what he might do there? Because obviously they know each other intimately. They've played each other, you know, more than a few times recently as well. So I just wonder whether there's a bit of mind games going on there. He also wanted to emphasise, Van Bommel, that it's really important they don't go behind in the cup final as well. He does not want to go chasing that game. I think he's worried about that. So, yeah, cup final coming up this week. I'm sure we'll all be watching that. Back to this game. Club, a couple of things about them. 6 wins in 7 playoff games now. They are the informed side in playoff one. Really, really good stuff. Nicky Hyan can now change his jumper, the grey jumper that, you know, was the good luck charm. Great interview with his partner a few days ago in the mainstream press in Belgium, where she was asked about that and said there wasn't much chance of him changing it until he needed to. Well, he can now because, you know, obviously they lost the first leg against Fiorentina, which saw the unbeaten run come to an end. But domestically, they're really playing very well at the moment and taking their chances. And as I was saying to Joris last week, and he was agreeing with me, those players, I think, are kind of enjoying playing under him. You know, the balance is better, and I think he's managing to get out of them just, you know, those few extra kind of yards that Ronnie Dyla, for whatever reason, wasn't able to do. They've got a massive game coming up on Wednesday. We don't know how that's going to factor into all of this. Can they be the first Belgian side to reach a major European final in 30 years? And how will that factor in positively or negatively to the big game coming up next weekend against Union, which from Union's perspective is absolutely a must win now that things are out of their own hands?
Well, yeah, that's definitely the case for Antwerp. For Union, yeah, they still have everything in their own hands, of course, but that's another topic still, but a difficult one to go anyway. But yeah, and on Antwerp and on this game again, like, yeah. After 60 minutes, actually, Van Bommel made a few changes, which looked like to be a bit already looking forward towards the cup final. But actually, they did indeed get probably their best spell in the game after those. So that's also posing some questions for him then, which is, well, probably a good thing, of course, better a positive choice or a luxury problem than anything else. But yeah, and for Club Brugge, yeah. Yes, says 19 points out of possible 21. Probably could have even gotten the 21. It's just really impressive. Even though not all the performances were as impressive, I would indeed catalog this one not necessarily as one of the more impressive ones. But they got a little bit lucky again, of course, as well with that first goal. They had a few of those game elements going their way in recent weeks, especially in the away games so far. That does, of course, help. Tempting their luck, but yeah, of course, that might be the champions' luck. That's also something you always say, of course. And of course, also going top now for the first time since August, I believe it is. So that's not the worst timing to do so. Not the best one either yet. That's only after specific game day or whenever you are over the line, of course. More to mention on them is Mignolet back in goal, of course, with Jackers out with a slight injury. Not really looking to need to look into that, but good for Mignolet that he didn't make any mistake, I guess, anyway, so to not create any kind of issues there or potential issues. But everything seems to be going well. And it was Club Brugge's first win at the Bosel since they celebrated their last title win 2 years ago as well. Let that be an omen, maybe, as well. But another thing for Club Brugge, the worst news is that Meijer has caught an injury, a knee injury. I think I said before it was an ACL injury. I'm not sure if that's the case, but either way, he's out for a few months. So, he won't be anymore in action this season. For sure. And another thing to mention then back to Antwerp is they were taking the referees under fire in their interviews afterwards, and I'm a bit is it also just in regards to this cup final to put them a bit under pressure there? Because unfortunately we have seen it seems to work in this league, and let's see if that is actually the case.
That's a very NBA move. Like in the playoffs and stuff, they always called out the referees, and then I think the Lakers did it against the Nuggets, and then they went and got loads of foul calls the next game, even though they always get foul calls, the Lakers. But anyway, this isn't an NBA podcast. I think my out for 7 months. Wish him obviously a speedy recovery and that, but in terms of a pure tactical and playing style, it means that kind of Hayen will have to play Maxime de Kuyper instead of him against Fiorentina, which is by far a better decision, because just touching on that kind of first leg, obviously Fiorentina beat Club Brugge 3-2. Really, really a fun, ridiculous game. Club very defensive, very, very kind of the setup was defensive. Odoi alongside Onyedika in midfield, lots of kind of route ones to Van Aken to flick onto Rodriguez, try and get him behind, or Thiago or Igor Thiago, whatever. But it did kind of work. I didn't think it was the worst idea. It wasn't Club Brugge style of football, in my opinion, obviously, but I don't think it was the worst idea against a Fiorentina side who kind of think the numbers say are very, very good at home, and they were more than happy to have the ball. But when it got to 2-2 through Thiago's second one, you're like, this is an incredible result. Especially the Onyedika. I think now I understand why Janssen did it. If people didn't know, Onyedika gets booked in the 58th minute and then just wipes someone out in the 61st and picks up his second yellow. Doesn't realise he's been booked for the first stupid tackle. And he does at that point, you're like, oh man, come on, you're in this game. Hayen's idea, it's not pretty, but it's working. Meijer was terrible. He was awful in this game. He was really, really bad at left back. And I think a lot of club fans are like, this is a terrible kind of decision. And Odoi was getting a lot of stick as well. It was kind of Odoi and Meijer again, absolutely piled onto from the club fans. So I don't disagree. I think Meijer was at fault for definitely the second goal for Belotti. He was just kind of overthinking and overplaying. So I think going into the second leg, to have only lost 3-2, been down to 10 men, I expect them now to play the more traditional kind of club style of football at home. And I think we've seen Fiorentina a couple of times this season now. We saw them play Genk, and we've all agreed that Genk probably should have got something out of those games. Club could easily have got a draw out of this game without kind of looking to dominate or play their style of play. They can go home. Hopefully they can put Vetlesen in instead of Odoi. They can go a little bit more attacking. Well, they're probably actually going to have to play Odoi because someone needs to play in the holding midfield role with Onyedika out. But I do fancy their chances at home. I don't know if this is just kind of naivety because we're a Belgian football podcast and we think, they've got a chance. And I feel like we've done this every year where a Belgian team's been up against someone and we're like, no, we think they can do this. But I don't know what you guys think, but I think the way they're playing, at the moment. Yeah, they weren't great against Antwerp, but the first leg gave me hope because I was like, they've come away with just a one goal deficit without playing their best and being down to 10 men and playing a completely different style of football. Yeah, I thought it was a good result. I don't know if you guys agree, but I do fancy their chances on Wednesday evening.
Yeah, I think they've got to be positive, I think, and they have to control the midfield. The one thing that, you know, they were nowhere near at all. In fact, they bypassed, as Ben was talking about. He's right. They went long most of the night. To still be in the tie is just massive, though. I mean, you know, on the balance of play here, the tie could have been over in the first leg. So that in itself is pretty successful. And I think to come away from that, you've got to be pretty pleased with that. Yeah, there'll be some changes, some of which are forced upon Nicky High, and others are ones he probably, you know, Ben's already mentioning one. De Kuyper probably should have been playing on there anyway, and now he's going to have to. So that's probably a positive as well. Yeah, I mean, absolutely they're in this, and there's no reason why not. And, you know, I feel pretty positive about it. And, you know, think how great it could be to sit here next week and to have a Belgian side in a major European final for the first time. Massive, absolutely massive. Massive for everybody. I mean, I know it's the club fans are the ones that care about this the most, understandably, but, you know, prestige, coefficient points, media attention, both for Belgian football and us here at the BFP is, you know, it's all good. So fingers crossed on Wednesday night that they can really finish the job.
Yeah, nothing to add there. Indeed, good luck to them in a few days' time. And also will be interesting to see whatever the result will be there, much like the cup final in next week's fixture between Club Brugge and Union. They both have some major finals or semifinals to play in this week. Whatever the result is, this can, well, psychologically, this can for both sides go both ways. So that there's so many things at play. Maybe it's going to be a very close game because of that. Maybe, yeah, some team will be flying in the other one. Not, who knows? Interesting to see the dynamics of that evolving.
Yeah, no, definitely. It does add like kind of an extra kind of overhanging cloud over this game to see like what sides are going to come into it psychologically after those kind of two things. Speaking of Union, they obviously drew 0-0 with Anderlecht in the Brussels derby. Both sides had enough shots to at least make this 3-3, but they just couldn't put them away. Anthony Morris made two good saves, guys. I don't know if you saw those, a double saves. Very impressive. But like you guys have had to bash him a bit over the last couple of weeks because he hasn't been great. But let's give the guy some credit. I thought he pulled off a couple of really decent saves. I think the biggest kind of storyline coming out of this is an injury to Jan Vertonghen. They have somehow managed to get away this season without having to really have a deep central defensive kind of unit. And they've kind of been going with the risk that this was going to happen at some point to a guy that's over 35 now, isn't he? I don't remember how old he is. I think he's 35, 36, isn't he? Playing every kind of game, putting in solid performances and that. Like at some point, he will break down. Like it's just an inevitability. They were just, I think, hoped that it would get to the end of the season and maybe they'd be okay. But I don't know if what you guys think, but in my mind, this does put a big dent in their title ambitions. Just because of the lack of depth there. And I just feel like him as a kind of calming presence at the back, as a leader, as someone who's kind of been around big matches, been around big occasions, he can really bring something. Like, he can still bring that off the pitch, of course, even though he's injured. But it was kind of in the heat of the battle, you look to someone like him. Like what we saw last season with Toby Alderweireld, he was kind of that kind of presence on the pitch that could kind of anchor things and make sure things didn't get carried away. So, yeah, I'm more concerned for Anderlecht now after this result and that injury than I was maybe before. I thought maybe, I don't know, in my mind it's just kind of gone to a two-horse race, which is the most ridiculous thing because I know it's not and they're still very much in it. But in my, there's just something about this injury and this kind of result that's just kind of pushed me towards thinking it's Union or club, and it's kind of whoever wins that game on Monday should win the title.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? This is, you know, this injury is one of these what-if moments. I think Ben's right. I think he's massively influential in there. They've got two home games coming up, Anderlecht. I don't know whether that will be a factor in how Brian Reimer chooses to kind of play things. Now, it'll depend on the outcome of obviously what the medical staff get up to over the next kind of two or three days as well. Pretty good game, this. I think a draw was the right result. Ben's right. It could have finished 3-3, 4-4. Both goalkeepers, actually, I thought had good games. Fair play to Anthony Maurice. Yeah, Ben's right. We did have a couple of gentle pops recently, but he seems to be back on it. He had a pretty solid game, as did Kasper Schmeichel, who, as we know, may or may not be there next season. Anderlecht have apparently in the last few days been stepping up their pursuit of a potential new goalkeeper. They're not going to wait until they necessarily have a definitive answer from Schmeichel, which obviously is the way you have to play these things. That's interesting. But yeah, both goalkeepers having strong games here, as they needed to, because offensively both sides were very good. Yeah, draw definitely the right result. Both sides having strong periods in this game. And I kind of, it's a result that doesn't really tell us kind of too much. It's the what if, as Ben's already told us, that might yet be significant in here. Union have, it was important for them to just not lose the game, essentially, which they've done because of the cup final coming up. You know, last time they won that, 1914, everybody. So, you know, they've got something juicy to play for as well. As I was saying last week as well, they've been the best side in Belgium for the last 3 years over the course of the peace union. So they've got a massive point to prove on their own in this cup final, because we don't know the outcome of their season yet. So yeah, that's something to watch out for. Brian Reimer will have been delighted to have had Schmeichel back and to have Dreyer back as well. And I think he will have taken that draw all day, regardless of how well they played, because it keeps them, you know, still in it without any Jan Vertonghen-sized problems.
Well, and to be fair, they played quite well with Vertonghen already being out against one of their main rivals already. So that might give them a little bit more perspective again as well, of course. That was the first 0-0 in those Champions playoffs as well. But like you guys said, it easily could not have been. It could have been a high-scoring game even. But definitely something to in there. And also, probably it was the best Anderlecht have played against Union in the, over the course of these past few years, to be honest. Especially in Duden, the Dudenpark. That's really not really unexpected, I guess, even. I actually personally did not feel like Anderlecht would have much of a say in this game, but they actually did. And they did play quite well. Vertonghen injury indeed. Yeah, there's also the interesting fact that both Achimeru and Vertonghen already had given back something towards towards the pitch. They puked on the pitch already in the early stages of the game. So is there something going on there? Probably not, but that's interesting. Also, this has nothing to do with it, I'm sure, because half the Anderlecht ladies squad were sick and they replaced the game, I think, even last week as well. But, well, the women's squad, I'm sure they don't touch that much with the men's squad anyway, so I don't think there's anything into that. But still interesting and weird and sad story at the same time, I guess. Although, well... Both Achimeru and Vertonghen played on, until Vertonghen actually had an injury, of course, which is probably, has nothing to do with that. So probably not that bad, just weird. but we've seen it more often with players lately, right? As well, weirdly enough, but I guess there's something in that. And on Union, they probably would have wanted to win this one, but indeed, they're still in it. They're not making it easier on themselves, of course, but not losing in this. And now, a lot of pressure on both their next games, of course, against the cup finals we already talked about a lot, and the game in Bruges against Club Brugge.
Yeah, no, that one's going to be a cracking game, that's for sure. So the Vertonghen's likely kind of replacement, who was the replacement obviously on the weekend, Federico Gattoni, he's only played 6 games for Anderlecht. He's only played 90 minutes twice That was one was against Erpen, so like, yeah, whatever. Like, I mean, we could probably play 90 minutes against them at the moment. Like, it would have probably been fine. The other was against Genk as well. So he hasn't made many appearances, but yeah, it's kind of those like, it's time for you to step up, mate. So yeah, good luck to him.
Oh yeah, realized, and also, well, hopefully this has no, we'll see, like, I'm not, Vertonghen is not a Vertonghen, despite his level in the league, is still. Okay, so it's a bit, it, although the level his level is decent still in the league, well, whatever ramification it might have as well for the national team, but that's worries for later. This I'm not sure if he still needs to be in there and if it's necessarily a bad thing, but we know there are defensive issues still at the back as well, though. So, yeah, it could be useful to at least have him in the squad.
I think it's kind of the same sort of thing, isn't it? It's like that kind of having someone with that leadership quality in there. You kind of do want him around, even if he doesn't play as much. But he probably, if he's there, he's probably going to play.
Yeah,
if it's fit, isn't he?
I think he will indeed if he's all right. But yeah, just regardless of that.
Yeah, I realized I was doing this all chronologically, and I just skipped over a game which was probably like most people would have skipped over. Me and Scott definitely skipped over it on Sunday afternoon. Leven against Stade Liège finished obviously 3-1-11. All about the second half, basically. John Torsteinsson comes on and the game changes. So, yeah, that says what it says. don't really care to talk about this game because it's kind of irrelevant. But obviously, for Standard, all this news coming out about 777, the 16 kind of legal cases being brought against them, all that sort of stuff. And then, is it today Vanasi's kind of said, I want all the assets back or something because he's not been getting his getting paid. So we won't really touch on it too much because we'll just kind of let the story unfold. But yeah, just to say, we're not ignoring Standard, but we will definitely get back to them because it is just an absolute mess. But we will get to the game that Scott and I were watching in a little bit, which had far more kind of meaning to it and interest. But yeah, just to say, we haven't forgotten about that result, but we kind of have forgotten about the result because it's completely kind of pointless, to be honest.
Do you know what my standard notes say, guys? Actually, my notes beside Standard this week, I've written in red letters, the storm clouds are gathering again.
Yeah.
And just on top of that, it's probably less important, but it's been 3 years since they won any kind of playoff game. So, literally, the 8th of May 2021, that was. And that was also the only game they won in that playoffs, and they were rock bottom in that one.
To be fair to them this season, like if it had been like seasons past, they wouldn't even be bloody in it, would they? Like they wouldn't even have to compete in the playoffs. They could be safely sat at home getting ready for whatever's going to happen next season.
I believe there's one season in between indeed where that happened as well.
You know what I find interesting about Standard, guys, actually, without us going into the detail of what Ben was talking around the legal cases and all of, you know, the new storm clouds gatherings I was alluding to, some of the staff and players this week have been talking in a way that I haven't really heard, you know, at all, actually, even in some of the other darker periods. You know, Lecco saying this week, I didn't realise things were quite as bad as they were, talking specifically about the situation at the club from a legal and a financial point of view. And Marlon Fossey this week as well, saying that there's such an air of negativity around the club that it's really, really hard to turn up for training and put in a shift. So you know that, you know, inside that camp, they're feeling... they're feeling low, which we already know. But yeah, I mean, long story short, you know, if these legal cases go the way that they're probably gonna, then that sale of Everton, 777's attempted acquisition of Everton, is almost certainly not going to go through. And that means the whole house of cards comes down, really. So what that means for Standard and the Vananzi situation, yeah, well, there'll probably be more news next week.
I feel like, and this is kind of linked to the next kind of team. This is what would have happened to Kortrijk if Vincent Tan sells to those Kaminsky clowns, isn't it? Like, this is what happened because they didn't have any money, but they were going to use the club to get money in and kind of spread it around and then start doing stuff like that. They're like, acquire the club and then we'll get people to invest. It's that sort of weird thing, which is like, I don't know, like you can't really do that in any other kind of world, can you? Like, when Joris bought his house, like, couldn't just go and be like, yeah, I bought this house, but then I'll get the money because someone will just give me the money because I've said I bought the house. Like, doesn't quite work like that. You need to at least have agreed to get the money and show that you can have the money. But I feel like this is what would have happened with Courtois, but it's just for Standard, it's been kind of dragged out, and it's just horrible. It really is so annoying. And I think Everton fans, while obviously their situation's bad, like, they will have dodged a bullet with seven not getting this group in by the look of things, because we've seen how it's gone over here. It's just hopefully they find someone else that wants to buy them in the meantime. But Kortrijk, obviously still owned by Vincent Tan, who he probably doesn't even know that when they what's going on at the club. He literally doesn't care. But they obviously hosted Open. They won 1-0. João Silva, of all players, that scoring. Absolute terrible defending, probably because Boris Lambert got himself sent off. I think when I saw that kind of pop up on my phone, because I was out at the time, and I saw Lambert sent off, I was like, "Oh, that's it then. That they're done. Like, they're not serious. Like, it's just that's the game." Then I saw Silva scored. I was like, "Yeah, that does it, doesn't it?" And I think, like, I do kind of feel for their fans. I do feel for their fans, because I feel like this is just this inevitable decline of what happens when. For both sides, I guess you've had at the beginning of the season, the owners being like, we just don't care anymore. We're not putting anything into this. You've got to do this on your own and kind of make the best of what you can. And Open, you can just look at the signings that they made, and it was always going to result. This was always going to kind of be the end result. Like, they're trying to, like, get as much out of flipping poor Alfred Finnbogason as possible. But the man's not been the Alfred Finnbogason that he was in the Bundesliga for years now. ironic that the club he leaves, then their manager joins Kortrijk that then relegates him. It's kind of this weird, like, Lyngby triangle, isn't it? Like, Danish Lyngby triangle that happens. But the difference, obviously, in coaching appointment as well, like what Freyr Alexandersson's done, that when he took over, this team had 10 points and looked completely dead and buried. And now they have it kind of in their own hands to get into the playoff, kind of relegation playoff. They could still lose that, but I don't think that takes away from what he's done so far this season. But yeah, 8 years Open win the league for. Had some kind of memorable moments. They obviously made that cup semi-final when we started the podcast, played some really entertaining football. They've had some good kind of exciting players come through at the same time, but it just felt like they were the size of the club. And they're one of those clubs that the moment kind of the money gets pulled, it was always going to kind of start this steady decline. They were always kind of, I don't know, Joris, obviously you've watched Belgian football for a lot longer than Scott and I, but a club of that size in that part of the country as well, just always punching above their weight, but at some point, you're not going to be able to keep punching as much. And once the owners pulled out, this was kind of it. But fair play to Kortrijk. They live to fight another day. They leapfrog Molenbeek. They just have to better Molenbeek's result on the final day of the season to finish in third. And then they'll play one of those Challenger Pro League teams, which we'll get to in a bit. But yeah, sad to see them go. I mean, they're not a club I've hated or anything like that. I know sometimes we can get clubs that go down. We're like, oh, I'm glad they're gone because they're just a waste of time. But it's nice to kind of have them in there and do some stuff like that. But I felt like this was inevitable this season. And fair play to them, they fought for as long as they could. But this was always on the cards.
Yeah, I think it's things catching up with Open, really, isn't it? You know, consistently poor sporting decisions over certainly the last 2 or 3 years in particular, I think. They've got a little bit of luck. They could have been in this situation last season very easily. Things definitely catching up with them. I think it's going to be a long road back. If there is a road back for them, this is going to do nothing to motivate the owners at all. And I think they're going to find it very difficult down there in the Challenger Pro League, because that is becoming a more competitive league, as we've talked a lot about this season, and that's certainly going to be the case next year as well. So they've lost 24 games open this season. You know, it's really, really miserable. They've only scored 27 goals as well, you know, when you look at the hard numbers. So in a league as physically difficult as this one, those numbers are just crushing. And it just felt inevitable, really. Their playoffs were no better than the rest of the season, really. There was no bounce of any kind whatsoever for them. On Kortrijk, a quick shout out to Kadri, who I thought was just outstanding this weekend. Absolutely brilliant. pitching in all over the park, and he's a player, you know, we know how important he is to them. They're just so lucky he's still there in a way. You know, he really has been kind of pulling a lot of weight for them in recent weeks. You know, they're out of that automatic drop zone, and it was really interesting to hear Freyr Alexandersson's post-match team talk on the pitch, which the club released a little bit of on their social media today, where he was saying, do not settle for this. You know, we're nearly there, but do not settle for this. Take this into next week and finish the job, because he made the point that Charleroi are a decent side, and although they're safe, you know, you can't take or read anything into that. So, you know, he's warning against complacency, much in the same way that Yannick Ferreira, I think, is trying to do in his way too. But yeah, it's a one-match shoot-off now.
Yep, and they maneuvered themselves in the best possible position. So, yeah, not much to add. I guess you guys really said everything there. Well, interesting fact was that both the goalkeeping coach from KV Kortrijk and Eupen's manager got a red card during halftime. So that was a funny sight on the start of the second half. But that doesn't happen every day. Okay, on the game itself, Eupen actually could have done a bit more, I guess, even, but it's not that they didn't lose it in this game, okay, even though they quite literally lost it in this game, but nonetheless, they did play quite okay, and they could have gotten there were a few tight calls as well by the referees. I think they were all correct probably in the end, but yeah, they all went against Eupen on this, and like you never know, as we've seen in other games as well, that the calls go a bit differently. But that changes the complexity of this kind of playoff games as well, of course. But yeah, they're gone. I'll miss their song. And although in the song they still sing as well, like, wherever we are, in which league we are, we'll sing our songs. So, well, not in that in English, but nonetheless, the equivalent of that. So that will unfortunately for their fans be in the league below this time around next year. But let's see. I'm curious how their fate will go actually in the second league as well. We saw that it doesn't always go well with the teams that do get relegated.
Yeah, I think my biggest worry for them is, like, I don't see them doing what Zulte Waregem did in the sense of, like, competing to come back up. I see them more, my biggest worry for them is it's an Oostend Selang situation. I don't think it's as bad as that, but, like, in terms of at least they had, like, a reasonable squad to compete in the Pro League, unlike Selang did. And Oostend obviously had terrible kind of issues financially and kept getting docked points, but you're not far off, and they've got a lot of players under contract still, so it's kind of like they could try and sell those guys to try and balance the books a little bit more. Like they kind of just have to work with what they've got to kind of rejuvenate what they've got. And I think you're kind of looking at what Beer Scott did with, like, basically no budget in a kind of similar situation where the ownership wants to get rid, and you kind of got to say, right, well, how can we work the kind of situation to the best of our ability? And I think, as Scott said at the beginning, they haven't been able to do that in the Pro League, so there's no real kind of faith that they'll be able to do that in the Challenger, where it is going to be a bloodbath again. Like,
but you've got some teams. I would say don't take the Zulte Waregem road, because I fear themselves now are in big trouble as well.
Yeah, no, I meant more as in, like, they went down and you look to them and you think they'll probably at least be able to kind of fight themselves to get back up. Like, they put all their eggs in one basket, but they had eggs to put into the basket in the first place. I don't think Eupen have any eggs. They've just got a basket and they don't know what to put in it. On Kortrijk, yeah, you mentioned Kadji, obviously Scott, who's obviously been there from the start of the season. Kangwa had another good game. He's starting to play quite well. Fuji at the back as well, I think he's been a nice pickup. I think he's kind of impressed. And yeah, they seem to do, like, pretty well picking up Japanese defenders, don't they, in recent years. Watanabe, obviously, and now Fuji as well. So yeah, they seem to be able to get these guys in and kind of get the best out of them. But looking forward to next week. It's a shit. Like you said, I kind of wish they could just flip the schedule now and be like, right, just play Kortrijk and Molenbeek against each other and just see who wins that one. Like, Charleroi and Eupen can just play the dead rubber because you're relying now on Open and Charleroi to turn up. And I think I trust Charleroi to turn up. I think they have been turning up, and I think those guys are playing to impress De Mille for next season. Whereas I don't know if Open are going to show up. I don't know what that's going to be like in terms of motivation. So we shall see. Obviously, out of those teams, Kortrijk or Molenbeek, they'll be playing Lommel or Denza. That game finished 1-1. Was slightly not confused, but maybe slightly disappointed in the atmosphere. I expected the atmosphere to be a lot better in this one. I don't know why. Like, I just thought playoff final and stuff. In the first half, it was really flat. And Scott, you mentioned potential like nerves amongst the fan base as well. You said that even the drummer was drumming nervously, just quite strange. But it got a little bit better in the second half. I think Lommel kind of fans got a little bit more into it. They scored a lovely goal, to be fair, a really nice teamwork goal. Denza then did get themselves back into it with Sven Bracken. Their fans were great all afternoon as well. The few that were able to make it into the Forest. Nicely poised going into the second leg. No one really showed anything that would suggest that it's not going to be the same next time around. I don't know what you think, Scott, but I just felt that these looked like two very evenly matched teams playing some decent football. Like, they look like, in my mind, that whoever they face, they're going to give them a good run for their money for a spot in the Pro League. Like, I think these are two very competent sides with, like, they seemed well coached, and they seemed to have like areas on the pitch where they could really do some damage and players that can do that.
Yeah, I think tactically both these sides are really interesting as well, because Lommel are very good on the ball. You know, they like to keep possession. You know, the two wide men, Jalan Vanksa, the young Hungarian starlet, who I think is probably going to go far. Lots of people watching him as well. It's a shame it looks like they're not going to be able to hold on to him, because if they do go up, you would imagine a year in the Pro League, if that happens, you know, isn't going to do him any harm at all. So it's a shame that he's, you know, advancing, perhaps moving somewhere else, and likely somewhere else potentially in the City Football Group in the meantime. Sometimes players just jump a wee bit too early, and I said this a while ago in relation to Vanksa when I was talking to somebody about him, that I felt that maybe that was the case here, but we'll see. And on the other wing, Juho Talvite, a decent player as well, and then Karim Derman in the middle, who's a really quite talented attacking midfielder as well. So there's a reasonable balance in that side, and they're a good side to watch most of the time when they're playing well. My issue with Lommel is in the final third, sometimes they overwork it and overplay it, and the interchanges just, you know, kind of disconnect a little bit. And often they you know, they're much better from set pieces than I think they even realise they are. Ben's right, great goal this weekend. Yeah, I mean, I think if Lommel were to come up, I think they would have plenty to offer, and you would imagine that a higher calibre of player would then come in on loan from the City Football Group as well to, you know, to aid them as a Pro League side. But we're getting a wee bit ahead of ourselves there. Interestingly for me, Denza played this game the way they've played all of the games tactically that I've seen them play this season. I've seen them play, I think this is the sixth time I've seen them this season, and they like to soak up a lot of pressure. They're happy to let you have the ball and hit you on the counter, which they're very good at. And this weekend, in this game, they didn't actually start trying to play any football until they went behind. When they did go behind and they started to play, they were actually the better side. But yeah, very finely balanced. Lommel, intriguingly, have got the better of Denza generally throughout the season. So in that sense, maybe they're still slight favourites. But it's going to come down to who wants it more in the evening, because it's just so finely balanced.
Yeah, unfortunately, I cannot add much because I haven't watched this game. I have to be honest here that... Yeah, we'll see. I still personally feel that whoever will be, whether it's Kortrijk or Molenbeek, is going to be the favorites in the game after this one, whoever comes out of this one. Like, I think the 1A side, the Jupiler Pro League side, is going to be the favorite. It's not a hot take to even, I think, but I still feel like that is the case. Yeah, the Challenger Pro League teams are not at the level that they used to be, maybe even in the evolution of the league over a few years, over the last couple of years, is what I mean. But difficult to measure that, of course. And also there, it will only come down to one or two nights. Two nights, I believe it is. But yeah.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I think, don't want to keep harking back to last year, but I feel like the Bevern team of last year, if they'd been in this situation, I'd have fancied them against kind of the Pro D team, just because they had like Tiena Barry and people like that. Whereas I think you've kind of hit the biggest nail on the head there, Scott, in the sense of like, if Lom will go up, we don't actually know what they'd look like next season with all that stuff. And it's like, that's kind of one of the real shames of it. It's like, you'd hope that this team would be allowed to stay together and kind of be added a couple of pieces to it rather than being moved on because they've been successful, especially Ransko, as you said, like he's been fantastic for them. And it's kind of like, let's see him in the Pro League, like reward the fans of Lommel for supporting the initiative and stuff like that by letting them have this kid. He's still a kid. He's so young. But yeah, the second leg of that, final. I don't really know how to describe these things. Like, that's the final, but then the next one's a playoff final. Like, there's just too many finals. This is kind of like a semi-final, but it's not.
We'll get a listener's question about that next week again.
Yeah, like, what do you call it? 12th of May, 3 o'clock is the second leg of that. Completely agree with yours. I think Molenbeek or Kortrijk will be favourites for that one. I think they've shown a little bit more about them in the playoffs than kind of they had been maybe potentially a couple of months ago. So, but it'll still be an interesting game. I think they will give them a good go, whichever these teams, because like we said, they do play some reasonably good football. But yeah, they just need to get lucky and actually take their chances. But that is that. So yeah, this week we've got obviously Conference League semi-final. We've got the Cup final. We've got Club against Union. We've got Lommel Denzel. It's all happening at the moment. So plenty to watch, plenty to be excited about, plenty to ask questions about, but maybe save them for Monday after the kind of the Club Union game, because anything could change before you ask your question, given that. But guys, it's been an absolute pleasure to be back chatting to you guys and joining you for the podcast.
I was just going to say, how delightful has it been to be reunited? Best of luck to Club Bruges this week. Fingers and toes crossed. And enjoy the cup final on Thursday, those who are watching.
Yes, and also, well, I'm not sure if we announced it last week, but we are sorry that our cup final preview, unfortunately, is falling through because of some logistical issues. Yeah, it's not that we didn't try, but yeah, unfortunately.
Technical and logistical, unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah, we've got a bit of a cup final curse going on here at the BFP, guys, don't we? Because something very similar happened to us last year as well. So next year we will definitely make it up to you with a cup final preview. But yeah, plenty more to come.
Third time's the charm.
Yeah, exactly. But we'll recap that. We'll recap everything that happens. So if you can steal away from work, if you're in the UK, I think it's 2:30 on Thursday. Good luck trying to do that. But yeah, for those of you that are in Belgium and can actually enjoy the holiday, enjoy it, enjoy the cup final day. It's always a great occasion, a cup final. Obviously, if you liked our podcast, you like we do leave us a review on your podcast app of choice. You can also buy us a coffee at Buy Me a Coffee. And yeah, if you've got any more questions for us next week, please feel free to get in touch with us in the usual ways. But as per usual, that's it from this episode. And we'll speak to you very soon on another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast.